The federal government set to reveal much-anticipated modelling from the Doherty Institute aimed at informing Australia's pathway to reopening. It'll be largely based on the vaccination rates required to live with COVID as safely as possible into the foreseeable future. Well, the Grattan Institute's also crunched the numbers and delivered a number of recommendations of its own in a report just released. And to take us through that report, I spoke earlier to Stephen Duckett, the director of Grattan's health program.
We are looking to 80% of the whole population being vaccinated and more than 95% in the vulnerable population, that is the population of people over 70, before it's safe to open up the borders.
So what would that scenario look like in terms of case numbers and deaths? Because we know COVID is going to be with us even at that high level of vaccination.
Absolutely. So we modelled a number of different scenarios for different levels of its transmissibility. And the one we think is most plausible is that it's highly transmissible. And so we've not been optimistic, we've been realistic. And in that scenario, we'd be looking at, after opening up, more than 10,000 cases. But because there's a high level of vaccination, most of those cases don't translate into hospitalisations.
10,000 cases per day, are you talking?
Yes, peak wow. number of 10,000 cases per day. And the whole purpose of vaccination is that it actually protects you if you're infected. So these 10,000 cases a day is a lot and, you know, way, way, way more than is causing lockdowns in Sydney, for example. But because of the high level of vaccination, it doesn't lead to intensive care unit use and it doesn't lead to death. So even though there's this huge rate of daily cases in our model, there's only about 2,200 or so deaths in a whole year.
Which That's sounds roughly... like a lot now when we are making breaking news with every COVID death, but this is the place we need to get to, isn't it? And it's not that far from what a bad flu season looks like, for example.
Exactly. So we needed to look at those issues. And so that range of deaths, you know, about 2,200 or so, is the same number of deaths that were in 2010 in the flu season. In a bad flu season, you might have 5,000 deaths in a year. In a moderate flu season, 2,000. In a good flu season, 1,000. So it's the sort of death rate that Australians obviously accept with the flu. Now, of course, no death is a good thing to plan for, but, you know, we're planning for an acceptable range of deaths. And if you open up before 80%, there's a risk that your death rate will go way up.
Yeah, let's look
much higher
at some of those scenarios. Some within the federal government have pointed to 70% as an appropriate figure. What would that look like in terms of cases and deaths?
Well, it again depends on how transmissible the virus is. If you're lucky and you gamble and you say, oh, we're going to assume it's not really very transmissible at all, you'd have almost no deaths. But we think that's highly unlikely. We think the most likely scenario is this very transmissible Delta variant, in which case there'd be almost 16,000 deaths. So huge numbers that I don't think the Australian population would accept.
And what about 50%? You modelled that too. I note that epidemiologist Nick Coatsworth, who's the government's front man for ads and messaging and the like, thinks that 50% is perhaps enough. What would it look like?
Well, I don't think he's actually done the modelling, so you can't blame him. Well, maybe he shouldn't have come up with that number. But at 50%, we'd be looking at almost 40,000 deaths. And again, I just think that's morally irresponsible.
And does that involve a collapse of our health system as well?
Oh, absolutely. So even if you add every possible surge capacity ICU, there's only 7,000 or so ICU beds in the country. And on our modelling, you'd have almost 100,000 people fronting up to be in the ICU. And that, again, it's just not the country we want to be.
No, absolutely. So look, if it is 80% then, how do we get there? Because, as I say, it's a long way off, and we've seen in the US and the UK, things do start to often slow down in terms of vaccination rates after about 50, 60%.
That's exactly right. And so what we need to do is boost the vaccination numbers. Now, the good news is that in recent surveys, only about 10% of the population said they're never going to get vaccinated. So we're talking about 90% of the population saying we want to be vaccinated. But a quarter of the population are saying, yeah, we want to be vaccinated, but not just yet. And so it's they're prepared to do it, but they're slow on the uptake. So we really need to speed that up. And one of the ideas we think ought to be on the agenda is a vaccination lottery, that everybody who's had a jab or two jabs gets a chance at a $1 million prize after November when the supply issues are fixed.
How many $1 million prizes? I think it's 10 per week, isn't it?
10 per week for between November and December. There are other ideas that are also floating around. You could give vaccines to big companies so they can vaccinate their workforce, vaccination centres for schools.
What about passport?
Yeah, well, there are two reasons you might think about that. One, a vaccine passport is an arrangement which says, you know, if you want to go to a nightclub, for example, you have to show that you're vaccinated. And one of the reasons for doing that is a good public health reason. That is, you know, a nightclub is a place where potentially the virus could spread very rapidly, a so-called super spreader event. And what you want to say is this is a place where the spread is likely, and a person who is unvaccinated is a person who could spread it, so you keep the two separate. So you say to the people who are not vaccinated, sorry, you're too much of a risk, you're not going in there. And that is also an incentive on them to be vaccinated.
What about if there's a sizable portion of the population that just refuses to get the jab? Is it worth considering, instead of targets, vaccine rate targets, a date to start reopening? And once everyone's had ample opportunity to get a jab, then it's on them.
Yeah, so that assumes that the vaccine is perfect for the people who are vaccinated, and unfortunately that's not the case. And so if we decide to open up at 70% vaccinated, for example, and say, well, the other 30% have had their chance, they run their risk, it is also a risk for the 70% who are vaccinated, because they might need to go to hospital because of a car accident or something, and they'll find there's no ICU beds because they're filled up with the unvaccinated people with COVID. So it's not fair on the vaccinated to open up and think you're just punishing the unvaccinated.
But what do you do? I mean, we can't stay locked down forever if there's that stubborn few or many, perhaps, that won't do it.
We think the vast majority of people are going to front up and be vaccinated. The problem at the moment is the demand exceeds the supply. I don't think we should assume that the public are not going to be positive and not going to actually go out and get vaccinated when the supply is available, especially when the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines become available.
That's Stephen Duckett, the Director of the Health Program at the Grattan Institute.